Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Okay, weather today, highs of 16 degrees centigrade, lows of 11 degrees centigrade. There will be some cloud, but mostly with bright or sunny spells, and it's going to be feeling warmer. Due to the winds, apparently, we're feeling warmer, Emma. So great
Fair
news
enough.
as far as that's concerned. I feel we should celebrate. Not only have we had coyotes, but what the hey, it's time after a gap of at least a month to bring out Amy Rush once again with, I think we know what's coming here, Kitty Decides. Pets and nutrition absolutely vital in so many ways, and we hopefully are well aware that you do not give chocolate treats to doggies, but there are other issues that are actually emerging, including the power of the flower in a negative sense, of course, and to address the challenges that exist in the gardens for both cats and dogs, we're delighted to be able to welcome to the programme this morning Chief Veterinary Surgeon at the fabulous Blue Cross Animal Hospital. That would be the legendary Mark Cropp Bosley. How are you, Mark?
Good morning. I'm all right, thank you.
Good. This is something which I must admit I was very surprised to find out. 80% of gardens contain harmful plants to cats and dogs. Very, very surprising material. Presumably, this is something which, as we expand our gardens and various other areas within that, we need to be very careful about what we're putting in to ensure that we don't give negative experiences to our pet friends.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some plants are a lot more toxic than others, but it's good to have that awareness of what some of the plants can do. We're particularly concerned with lilies and cats. We see a number of cases at the hospital every year of cats which we either know or we suspect have had lily poisoning.
I mean, that's, again, quite extraordinary insofar as there's a story that you shared with us in the press release about a young cat who'd actually licked lily pollen from her paws and needed intensive treatment for several days.
Yeah.
I mean, is it just a case of hypersensitivity? I mean, because lilies have been around for years in all sorts of ways. What are the sort of best ways to actually be aware of these allergies that reactions that can occur?
Yeah, I mean, in lilies, we don't actually know what the active ingredient is, but it's actually particularly toxic to cats. They cannot break it down. And what happens is they can get severe renal impairment. If we can get it early enough and treat them with fluids really aggressively, we may be able to pull them through. If it's too long or we don't get there soon enough, then unfortunately some cats will die from this.
Occasionally, my own cat Tigger sadly passed away a few years ago, but he would go into the garden and he would eventually throw up various balls of grass and various other bits and pieces, and we thought, well, it's his way of cleansing the system and various other things. He didn't seem to be adversely affected by the whole system. Presumably, in most cases, grass is okay for cats. I mean, they shouldn't eat a great deal of it, but in terms of that system, that's not going to be hugely problematic.
Yeah, so in general, grass is fine, although we do see a few cases in the hospital where the grass blade actually gets stuck behind the soft palate at the back of the mouth, and they have difficulty breathing, sneezing a lot, and we have to actually give them an anaesthetic to remove this grass blade.
Foxgloves, azaleas, wisteria and more can be poisonous to pets with symptoms including vomiting and diarrhoea. I mean, it sounds as though actually just letting out your pet into the garden for what you'd normally sort of regard as sort of a natural sort of chance to actually chill out and experience the wild, it's fraught with danger.
Well, there is danger out there, but we're not saying asking people to dig up their gardens. We just want them to be aware of what possible problems can be. I mean, it would be quite unusual for a dog or a cat to eat a foxglove, but it's not impossible. And if you do see your dog eating something as you're walking along, and it could be possibly poisonous, just to be aware of the possible causes and symptoms to look for in the dog afterwards.
Is there a similar thing with respect to the fruit of the laburnum tree? Because I remember that I was once told never, ever, ever take any of the laburnum thing. It'll kill you from that point of view. Is that a similar thing for other mammals like cats and dogs?
Exactly. There is something in there. which is related to nicotine, actually. And it can cause, it's a respiratory stimulant, it can cause problems. But to be honest, it's very rare for us to see dogs eating this and see cases of poisoning from this.
Well, certainly, it's again vital research that you've actually put into place there. What about species coming in from overseas and more exotic flora that are emerging? And certainly, you know, as those people get sort of very much into gardening, etc., I think we want water features, we want a few other sort of bits and pieces as well. Mm-hmm. Can they also sort of be problematic with respect to our own species of cats and dogs?
Well, there are all sorts of poisons you can get from flowers and plants. We've got some more information on our website, so if anybody's got a specific question, they should visit the website on bluecross.org.uk.
Which makes perfect sense. I was just going to move on to the website. Of course, you mentioned it there, bluecross.org.uk, in terms of that. Finally, if we actually are looking at the overall prognosis for events such as this, I mean, clearly, you know, one of the major things that people worry about is if their cats or their dogs actually sort of emerge and get run over on the roads, etc. But mm-hmm. It would seem that you still need to bear in mind that, you know, they can be allowed out, but just be very careful in terms of what sort of things are actually out there in the garden.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But also, you know, I'm not saying stop letting your animal out. It's more just to be aware if you see them eating a particular type of plant, just to be aware of the signs that it can cause.
Yeah, indeed. It's been fascinating just raising some of the key points there. I think certainly in terms of the consciousness raising, who knows, we might have saved an animal's life, which is something actually, very excited about. But from your own point of view, you do it on a daily basis, Mark. Mm-hmm. So fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. A reminder, of course, that the web address to go to for further information is the usual 3Ws, bluecross.org.uk. And the two final questions are, have you had a reasonably interesting and relatively safe telephonic interview with us this morning, Mark Bosley?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
So can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the not-too-distant future and keeping us appraised of some of the challenges? I mean, 80% of gardens. This sounds... I mean, that was the headliner for me, that you could sort of say maybe 20 or 30, but 80%, four-fifths of gardens actually containing harmful plants to cats and dogs. Hopefully, in most cases, they do actually have their own intuition and instinct that they actually don't just chew the things on a matter of course. Or is that not a case? Is it just a case of, well, they're just a bit silly at times?
Well, I mean, it's true. You know, the poisons in plants are part of the natural protection of a plant to stop it getting eaten by an dog or a cat.
Yeah,
and often they just cause upset stomachs, but there are some more toxins involved as well. So often a pet will stop eating once they start chewing on it.
Sure. Well, Mark, hopefully, as I say, we'll be able to connect with you again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of all the excellent work that you do as Chief Veterinary Surgeon for the fabulous Blue Cross organisation. Mark Bosley, we salute you.
Many thanks.
So who'd have thought it? Lilies, actually. Lilies, Emma, causing difficulty in cats and dogs.
I know, sad.
Let's go to our rural countryside expert, Minty Steed. Minty, did you come across these problems with plants and animals and grass and all sorts of things there?
I'll put it this way. I do hope we're not getting to the point with animals, rather like to now in America, that people are actually being prosecuted if they allow their children any further out to roam than their walled or enclosed garden. And even if they only go a few yards away from home, they get what you call the child police protection on the doorstep, that you mustn't allow your child out. I hope we're not getting that point with animals.
Well, personally, Minty, I've always felt
that... I hope we're not getting that, and I hope we're not getting the point where when one particular charity, I really do have to say this, because, I mean, there's a difference in having good knowledge and a certain modicum of common sense, where they put a review that one in four are mentally ill, and when you found out the actual question they're asking, were you upset because you lost someone, and they put down actually the genuine emotion of grief and bereavement was put down as a mental illness. Now that, you know, I would hope we're going to be sensible. Mainly, the main rule is, if you cut it, clear it, because an animal's instincts will 9 times out of 10 protect it from everything. Nature works with nature. But once you cut that plant, once you pull up that bulb, once you trim those leaves or prune or do whatever you're doing, clear it, because if you leave it, then the animal can be in trouble. That's the main thing. When you're gardening, clear what you've been gardening. don't leave it laid about. Same as grass is a natural feed for horses and ponies, but if you cut it and leave it and then give the cuttings later on to a horse or pony, you can give it colic and kill it. Common sense, that's what's needed.
Do you know, I think that's the catchphrase that our vet, Mark, should have actually worked on. I mean, Emma, you know, if you cut it, clear it.
Yeah, it's good.
Straight to the point.
No, I think it's great that you're saying these things, because I think a lot of people buy a pet and then they don't think about the responsibility, and it is a lot of hard work to look after an animal.
Yeah, but just pure common sense is that, you know, should always be a modicum of common sense. Nature tells an animal when it needs grass, and it clears the system, and it does get rid of balls of hair, and often can die of balls of hair.
I remember the time clearly where Tigger would come in and go...
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's still up there.
And it knew.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they know everything that the world has made of its
And let's face it, you couldn't have a pussycat putting its paw down its throat to make it as well, but it's not going to work.
You know? No, not really, no. Can you pick it up like a lamb and shake it?
So before we actually go on to consider Emma heading off with myself, all being well, this weekend, and possibly even Jessica Ward to the preview, the curtain raiser, because there will be events taking place on Saturday at the Burley Game and Country Show at Burley House Links. I was fascinated by one of the things you texted me earlier this week and said you want to talk about the revenge of Mr. Trout.
Oh, yes.
Say that again.
Great fun.
The revenge of Mr. Trout.
Are
we mistreating trout these days? Have we started tickling trout?
Well, man called Mr. Trout apparently have been mistreated, yes. We did. We went to a special sort of family fun festival day, and it was being held all over the area. We went to Selby, thought we'd try something entirely different, and it was great fun. We sort of ended up transfixed by this, because we said Mrs. Trout before she turned herself into Mrs. Trout. She's a very good actress, and she's from the theatre at York. And they do this outside one because it involves a lot of water and also for children to interact. So up comes, if anyone remembers the galleon they used to have at Scarborough, the sort of miniature galleon, you know, it sort of it came out in the back of a van, all these pieces, and it's set together as in said galleon. And then they invited children to come and join in. They all sat in, they became the crew. And Mr. Trout was a sort of put upon husband, whose wife always managed every year to get her own back on him with sort of clever tricks, etc., and jokes that he couldn't cope with. So he devised the revenge of Mr. Trout to call her over for her birthday, to give her a cup of tea with something so she'd go to sleep for a little while, and then they would make her walk the plank, and but then she had to stand on top of the plank, and if she couldn't answer the questions, he'd put her over buckets along, and then all the buckets of water thrown over her. Yes, and the children enjoyed it hugely, and it was great fun. And I have to say, this is more for the adults here, so children don't need to listen to this, but a lot of the men that were around who were either setting up stands, preparing their own exhibitions, or generally watching in the audience or waiting to go into a certain well-known public house that had a lot of Irish music and folk songs and things on the go, that they rather fancied her as Mrs. Trout, even more than they did before she became Mrs. Trout.
Well, what can I say?
With her blonded wig and everything on. And and she did it brilliantly. And I have to say, hats off to both of them, Mr. and Mrs. Trout, the way they did it, interacting with the children. It was wonderful to see them, how they did it. And one particular child became sort of carried away, that when, at the end, he said, "We'll have our vengeance next year." So they all said, "Yes." And then he said, "What shall we do with her?" And he listed various quite mild things. Then he said, "Shall we take her to the zoo and feed her to the piranha?" And this little girl jumped forward, started jumping up and down and waving her hands at the edge. "Oh, yes, please. Yes. Yeah, oh, let's feed her to the piranha and watch them eat her."
State of education of the world today, am I?
Absolutely. But They did it very well, and all the children absolutely loved it. And we should have really been over where all the Irish music that was going on, but to see how they interacted with the children, and the very shy ones who had to have a parent with them, and these very good parents.
Well, particularly if they're going to be fed to the piranhas. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no, we can't feed the children to the piranhas.
Oh, yeah, let's feed them to the piranhas.
Yeah. Okay then, so that's The Revenge of Mr. Trout, probably doing various country shows around the country.
He's going
from that
around
point
the
of view.
Country. Excellent. Yeah, so I didn't see it. And then we went to Kaywood, and we had where they had the Landmark Trust. They had all their places open, and they had a most splendid chap called Peter Watson, who did a very, very good Henry VIII. Because of course Wolsey was there at Kaywood in his time. Of course, when the word was up about that he would have his head off or worse. And of course, we all know about that, don't we? About Wolsey.
Well, certainly, so does Hilary Mantel, but that's another story entirely.
Absolutely. And the actual housekeeper who looks after Kaywood on a day to day basis, she was well built female, and she played the part of being the housekeeper, of course, who was definitely kept house for Wolsey in every way.
It seems as though it's been outdoor theatre with human beings.
Yeah,
we Lindsay, have.
What advice would you give Emma Tenson, who may be joining us for the first preview show at the Burley Game and Country Show, part of Living Heritage, where we'll hopefully be talking with Mark Hume, amongst others, on Saturday. So, I mean, what sort of things should she prepare for? I mean, she is a Surrey gal, of course, so...
I see, yes. If you're going to watch such as the Terrier events, don't be at all surprised if terriers set about each other in the middle of the ring. It's part of the entertainment, and they have their ways of passing them. And the treats and screams are far worse than the dangers and the damage. But don't worry about that one. Join in cheering with anything that goes on. And if anyone asks you to join in, just have a go. You won't take any harm, and just see what you can try out. And do watch the, which I shall describe, the horse board. It's like skateboarding behind a horse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Quite literally skateboarding.
And go up and see Fiery Jack. He's there, and he really is a really decent chap, and he does the full jester act as they did quite some centuries ago. And do go meet him, and he'll show you how to juggle if you don't know how to juggle.
Wow, we're looking at the website at the moment, and there's loads
Scurry
of pictures
driving,
on it.
Driving, Shire horse logging, horseman of the night, and of course that pièce de résistance, which is growing in popularity. Horseboarding. Not to be confused
with
waterboarding, which of course is what the CIA used to use to interrogate.
No,
I've never heard of this before. I didn't know this existed. Oh,
it does. It does. Believe me, it does. Also, of course, the... Le Crazy, don't miss that, where we have, of course, the Lurcher Hurling, the Lurcher Racing, and the Lurcher Long Jump, of course, so don't miss that one. That could
truly
be quite eventful.
A wondrous experience. As we sort of begin to watch the videos of the horse boarding, would you like to put those last two questions, Minty Steve, please? Emma?
Of course, Minty, have you enjoyed your time on the show this morning?
Definitely.
And will you be joining us again on the programme anytime soon?
Yes, no doubt, quite soon, especially if we don't do so bad at Burley, and do go and see everything. It's well worth it. And all the fun dog events for the 2 days is held on behalf of Future Saved, which looks after animals while people are ill or in different difficult situations where it doesn't allow them to keep their animals for a while.
Fantastic.
And remember, if you cut it, clear it.
Absolutely, Ali.
Another wonderful Brandon Flowers track from his latest album, The Way It's Always Been. David J. Howe for actually sharing a fun time that he actually had with us, and of course with his partner Sam Stone on the official Stone Tapes launch, which actually we recorded last night. It'll be available as a podcast probably later on today, so for once we're actually giving our podcast listeners the chance to actually tune in before the show goes out live on Siren,
which exclusive
is, yes, next Thursday. The fantastic Siren FM, David Harris says.
Well,
Sam Stone recorded,
we don't like to boast, but we are good.
Recorded the pilot for her new genre show, The Stone Tapes, last night. All went well. We had a great time, and it will be transmitted here next Thursday evening, 28th of May, from 7 p.m. So there we are.
Brilliant.
It's good stuff there. And we go from Twins of Evil and Peter Cushing through to a very graphically designed Starburst writer's novel, which is, I mean, I was even sort of a bit concerned about the whole sort of stuff. Put you off hitchhiking for life. Not that you should necessarily take it involved. Very strange. Okay, let's see if William is actually going to be able to reach us, because he has been extraordinarily busy this morning.
He is a busy bee. He's always
very
busy.
Very, very busy. But we will try and reach him and maybe actually put him live on a, if not, well, we'll just simply have to leave a message on the voicemail and
we'll be very sad, of course.
Well, Jane Southall yesterday.
Morning, Alex.
There we are. You say he's just the consummate professional, is he not, Emma? You
yes, know, of course.
Clearly.
Good morning, William. How are you?
Busy in every sense of the word.
Well.
Yes, exactly. Yes, just for yourself, Evertonson, back on the show, William. So, you know.
Oh, I just want to hear her talk.
Exactly. It's all sorted through. So,
I just want to hear her talk, not you.
Oh, fair enough.
Oh, how nice. But, you know, Alex is in charge, so we've kind of got to let him talk a little bit.
Emma, you can take over the whole thing. I'll just go off and have a coffee, if you like. You know, just carry on. You can ask him about what he's doing and horseboarding and much, much more. Go, Emma.
Yes, well, William, why don't you tell us what are you so busy up to today?
Well, I can't tell you what I'm doing, but I am cycling at the moment.
Aw, you're like a secret agent. You've always got these little secret things that you're doing.
Well, you know, I pad around the world. Let me tell you, so yesterday I had lunch at the Waterside Inn. It's 30 years that it's been since it got its first star. It's had 3 stars for 30 years, three games for 42 years. And it's a pretty interesting kind of example of consistency. And I organised a gathering of the nation's greatest food critics and writers. Michel Roux Sr. was there. He's the Julio Iglesias of the food world, I think. So that's what I was doing for most of yesterday. So this morning I'm trying to recover in between meetings.
Lovely.
But it's sunny. I hope it's sunny in your village as well.
It's a little bit sunny here, but we're not getting our hopes up too much, I don't think. I wanted to ask you, actually, William, because I was having a discussion with one of my friends who's quite a bit of a foodie, and she was saying that she has a particular favourite meal of the day, and she said that breakfast is her favourite meal. I was wondering if you had a favourite meal of the day and why.
Well, I think it kind of depends, really, on where you are and what you're doing. I mean, I think, and it depends on who you're with, really. I mean, I think that lunch, if there's time, it's one of the great things in life. You know, a long lunch is a fantastic treat. I think that breakfast is great, but breakfast is fraught with difficulties because, you know, depending on where you are, can you risk ordering scrambled eggs? You know, can you be sure that they're going to be creamy without using any cream? Can they be cooked perfectly? Is the bacon going to be the proper kind of bacon? So, you know, you have to put your life into the chef's hands, and sometimes people dash out breakfast using the sort of, you know, the kitchen porter, whereas actually, as we all know, you know, making breakfast and making good omelettes and making good eggs is a tremendous skill. So I do love breakfast. I think it's and I always have it, although actually having said that, I've missed it this morning. But I love dinner as well. Yeah, I love getting home and I love having supper with my kids. Nothing gives me greater pleasure than sitting around the table with my children and my wife. So I think it kind of depends on where you are, who you're with, really.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I think it's quite a sociable thing, sitting down to a meal and having a proper meal, whether it's out or in at your own home. I think it's quite a nice thing, really.
Of course it is. I mean, it's where community begins. It's where world peace starts. If you don't sit down and break bread with people and speak at the table, then there's no community. And that's, and you know, if you don't sit down as a family, you know, it's the destruction of society begins. And I mean that. It's not just a stupid Sitwell comment. I mean, I think that it's very important that people do commune over food. And we forget that as we're rushing around and, you know, eating al desco and so on. The problem with breakfast, of course, it can be solitary, which is not the problem. That's part of the beauty of breakfast. It's the one meal where you can go out and, you know, and eat on your own very happily, you know, with a newspaper and think about the day ahead.
Definitely. Well, I think you're definitely going to create peace with meals there. I think you're definitely right. And can you tell us, what have you got on the horizon, any new events or anything that you're going to that you're quite excited about?
Well, I'm going to the Malton Food Festival. It's a beautiful town up in Yorkshire. I'm giving a talk and I'm comparing a few celebrity chefs on Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, not too far from Lincoln, just keep going north. So Malton is this amazingly beautiful town.
It's and, the home of Minty Steed.
Ah.
Oh. Well, there you go. You've got access to your brain, or is it Google? So, yeah, the Malton Food Festival, that's part of my weekend. And then, of course, I'll be at home mowing.
Oh, lovely.
Exactly. And when one man goes to mow a meadow, William goes to mow a meadow. Sorry. Oh, wondrous. I don't know about Malton. We just scrapped our trip to Burley House and decided to actually move northwards as opposed to southwards for the weekend.
Maybe.
Very, very crazy, crazy stuff. William, do you vary your routine? Because it ties in with psychologist and TV presenter Dr. Rob Young, who we're speaking to in a few moments, that suggests that people who vary their lunch choices twice a week are more likely to earn more. And if you vary your route to work, you're three times more likely to earn in excess of $60,000 a year.
Well, I certainly vary where I eat. I mean, I think I eat a probably different place every single day.
Exactly. You see, and that's so, why.
But in terms of varying my route to work, it depends on where I walk up.
Well, but that's why William Sitwell, day by day, opening up new neurological pathways. Anyway, I think you did extraordinary well. It's what I felt I had to leave you two guys alone to get sorted out on that particular area, which I think we have done, effectively. I've just been looking at horseboarding pictures.
Which is very interesting as well.
Is that like waterboarding for animals?
No, it's like surfing with the board attached to the horse.
Yeah.
And usually with a human being on the board.
Skateboarding behind a horse, which seems quite dangerous, but it looks quite interesting, I think.
Yeah. That's what we'll be doing whilst you're giving presentations in Malton. Never mind. It's all part of that whole setup. Emma, the last two questions for our cycling magician, William Sitwell.
Of course, William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yeah, great to catch up with you guys.
Fantastic. And will you be joining us again on the show anytime soon?
I can't. You guys just keep calling me. I've not got any choice in the matter.
I know. We can just call you whenever, right? You'll always pick up.
Whenever, wherever.
Hey, he's the old martini for the 21st century. It's amazing. But still, there are some people who probably won't even get that martini reference, but still, YouTube it, that's what I say. Change the natural condition of existence, some people might say, whatever your philosophical point of view. But if we're actually looking in terms of the advantages of changing your daily routine, perhaps it might lead to success and happiness. To address this, and a recent survey that's been conducted to actually explore the ways in which people actually do change, we're delighted to welcome that fantastic psychologist extraordinaire and ace TV presenter, Dr. Rob Young. How are you, Rob?
I'm really well, especially after that introduction. Thank you.
Always critical that it works our way through this. Now, this notion of varying your lunch choices twice a week more likely to lead to higher earning power. Tesco Mobile have actually commissioned the research with respect to this. Is this just a case of if you change things, you're likely to adapt more easily to changing circumstances, or is it more deeper than that?
Well, I think that essentially what this research highlights is that people who are changing things in their lives are exposed to more opportunities. So if you think about, you know, sort of taking the same journey to work all the time, you're not going to stumble upon new things. Whereas if you get off the bus a couple of stops earlier, or, you know, you drive a different route, you may discover, hey, there's a new restaurant that's opened up, or, you know, oh, I didn't know the, you know, sort of that shop's closed down and something else has opened up instead. So by doing different things, we're more likely to expose ourselves to different social and career opportunities, whereas by doing the same thing all the time, you're unlikely to come across anything new.
We all like our comfort zones, and I think, Sue, do you like your comfort zone as well from your own perspective?
I do, yes. And actually, what I was going to say was the initial reading all the research from this. Certainly, people with chaotic lives are often told, OK, you know, get yourself into a bit of a routine. Mm. So I find it quite interesting that this is completely the other way around.
Do we now say, Rob, get yourself out of that
routine? Out of the routine.
Well, I think, yes, we're talking about different ends of the spectrum. So there are some people who are so disorganised that they need a little bit more. But what really came out of this research commissioned by Tesco Mobile was that around 70% of people describe themselves as creatures of habit. And they're actually varying very few things in their lives. So the majority of people are in this rut, this routine of just, you know, eating in the same places, meeting up with the same friends, doing the same things. And the danger is that doing all of these same things, being in routine, doesn't make us any happier and doesn't make us any wealthier either, unfortunately.
77% of those surveyed in the East Midlands apparently are nervous about trying new things. Again, that's part of the whole notion, is it? Feel the fear, grasp the nettle of uncertainty and do it anyway. Would that be your advice, Rob?
Yeah, because essentially you get out of life what you put into it. So, you know, just thinking about how the brain works, by putting ourselves in new situations and trying even new small things, we are literally creating more connections within the brain. Of course, sometimes you may try new things that you don't like, but occasionally you may discover something you really enjoy or love. And by just doing new things, you may come across, you know, I keep talking about these unexpected opportunities. You know, but by striking up a conversation with someone random, you know, you could end up with a job offer, or you could end up introducing, you know, that person to your best mate and they could get married. You just don't know what might happen.
Now, clearly, this is one of the reasons you're ideal to host the series Who Would Hire You and How to Get Your Dream Job. But again, coming out of this survey, I was fascinated by the suggestion that those who regularly change their route to work were three times more likely to earn in excess of $60,000 a year. That's quite a significant shift in terms of earning potential, Rob.
Yeah, and I think that's just one of the symptoms, isn't the right word, but it's an indicator that the more people are exposed to change and new circumstances, the more likely they are to come across great opportunities. So you know, if to give you an example, suppose that, you know, sort of you or Sue, you know, you're both socialising with, say, 10 friends on a regular basis, whereas I tend to stick to a small social circle of, say, 5 close friends. Almost by definition, you're twice as likely to get a word-of-mouth job recommendation. You know, sort of someone might say to you, you know, oh, we're looking for a psychologist who can do this or that. You know, sort of, you know, if you're hanging out with more different people, you're going to hear about more opportunities than if you hang out with the same small group of people.
Sounds like the Midweek Drive Morning Edition writ large then. Sue, does this resonate with yourself? Because you've taken some interesting life choices, becoming a mature student and reading a postgraduate degree in community radio being for one.
Life has certainly got more interesting in the last 18 months. That is true, yeah. I mean, yeah, I do take your point about, you know, getting out of that, your comfort zone, and therefore seeing more things, meeting more people, getting to know more things. I think that the thing for me is that ability to be able to do that, to put yourself out of the comfort zone. There's something that people want to see as far as employability is concerned, that you're willing to maybe take a little bit more of a risk. You're willing to look at your current situation and think, actually, I need to change that a little bit to make it better. Do you think that's something that means that they're more employable?
Yes, vastly so, I think. Because if you think about it, you don't want to hire people who say, you know, oh, no, that's not my job. Oh, you know, I'm not willing to do that differently. You know, so I was hired to do this. They are, you know, sort of darned difficult to work with, aren't they? You want people who are adaptable and flexible. So when you say, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, I'm going to need everyone to stay late. Oh, no, I can't do that. My contract says I finish at 5:30. So, you know, being a creature of routine is possibly something that could hold you back at work as well.
In terms of the simple things that we can actually do, somebody listening to this at this very moment, Rob, and they're thinking, what's the best way? Will it simply relate to just change your routine and actually look at kind of different ways of the way you actually look at things, the way you actually sort of take your route to work, for instance?
Yeah, so changing your route to work occasionally, you know, just a couple of times a month could be one thing. Try heading to a different restaurant rather than just going to your favourite Indian or Chinese place on a Saturday night. Read a different newspaper, just maybe, you know, a couple of times a week. Strike up a random conversation with someone or on your smartphone or tablet, you know, try a different app. So I'm not saying that you have to do vastly different things to shake up your life, but just whatever your circumstances, you can probably change some of the smaller things in your life, you know, and just keep yourself mentally stimulated.
I just have to say, Rob, that just putting in on your Twitter feed about to spend the morning talking on 20 national and local radio stations talking about new research on how routines may hamper creativity, sensational, you know, in 140 characters or less. You summed up the whole thing there. It's genius. Sue, any concluding thoughts?
I think I will most likely, if changing my routine means that I'm likely to get more chance of earning big money, I think I shall go away now and consider what I need to do.
Finally, from my own point of view, Rob, this whole neuro-physiological side of things, is that, do we see evidence from brain scans and so on that actually changing routines does actually fire up new pathways, new connections within, you know, our own brain capacities?
I can think of one study where people who were training to become taxi drivers, so, you know, they're learning a lot about maps and, you know, sort of understanding how to navigate a city. When you actually look at taxi drivers versus people in the general population, they have actually got different amounts of brain matter. They have got chunkier bits of the brain. So, you know, it's not absurd to believe that actually you could create more brain matter by mixing things up.
Rob, it's been a genuine pleasure touching base with the good self. Of course, robyoung.com, an ideal go-to website, superbly put together, I have to say, and looking good. Are there any other websites you'd suggest might be worthwhile going to if people were looking for further information on this particular aspect of varying your routine and, of course, looking at one of the secrets to success and happiness?
Well, if you want to find out more about this research, then go to the tescomobile.com website where you can find out more about the survey and its results.
Superb. Always important to actually get the official line in, I think, Rob. Finally, have you had a reasonably interesting and, you know, relatively innovative telephonic link with us this morning? Has it been okay for you?
No, it's been terrible. No, of course, it's been great. Thank you, Alex and Sue.
It's that sort
You've
of unexpectedness. Exactly.
Have you?
So the next critical thing is, and a fellow college, King's College London graduate as well. Unbelievable. Mind you, I was there a few years ago doing chemistry and biology. Can we look forward to featuring you again, Rob Young?
I would love to be on any time.
Hurrah!